It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We're currently witnessing the fastest labor market recovery from an economic crisis in history, world history. By contrast, Biden presided over the worst, the weakest, and the slowest economic recovery since the Great Depression. Biden and his very liberal running mate, the most liberal person in Congress, by the way, is not a competent person, in my opinion, would destroy this country and would destroy this economy.
President Trump keeps talking about how great this economy is, how great the stock market is, but it hadn't been so great for the rest of us. Millions of people out of work, evictions on the rise, 20 million people worrying about where they're going to lose their home. What in God's name else can this guy do? Let's look at one simple fact. This president is on track to be the only president in modern history to end up with fewer jobs at the end of his term than existed in America when he began his term.
I'm not sure about that, Joe, but Sandy Rios with you. That's kind of what it's sounding like right now. It's after Labor Day. You know that, right? Labor Day was yesterday. So the campaigns are in full swing. And for many, it's business as usual, politics as usual. I don't see it that way. I see it as a very dangerous time. We have two months before we cast our ballots, and I want to spend the opening part of our show today just talking to you about that. First of all, let's just say the American people, are still short of poll workers. There's still a shortage, and there's still a danger that they will close down polls and make you vote in a different way, or there may not be something near you to vote if they cannot find enough poll workers. And so I'm asking, as I have many times, I'm asking you again this morning, if you are concerned about this presidential race and all the other candidates on the ballot, and you want to make sure that our election system is as close to honest as possible, please call your county clerk, call your county official officers and say you want to sign up to be a worker, not a volunteer, but a worker at your local polling station. And it doesn't have to be your own station, too. You can go somewhere else. I believe I'm right about that. I think you can be a poll worker. Maybe it has to be in your state. I'm not sure about that. But it doesn't have to be just where you vote, okay? So if you have not done that, please do that. Tell your friends to do that. Let's get motivated. Let's get out there, an army of honest people. That's all we want, honest people who want the election to be fair and honest. And so please, if you haven't done that, please, please make that call to your county and sign up and, you know, try to get hired. That's what you have to do. Give an application. Get hired as a poll worker for that day. All right, you heard the president talk about the economy. The economy is rebounding incredibly. I don't know how. Certainly, many of you are still unemployed, and some of your benefits are coming to an end, and Congress is in a fight over whether to extend more, you know, money to those of you who have been caught in the crosshairs of this fake pandemic. It is a fake pandemic. And so, but you can't help that. And so they're trying to figure out how they can extend some more relief. The Republicans are asking for just a couple of trillion. The Democrats are hoping for more trillion than that, and of course a lot of their pet projects. And so it's an argument, and I'm not sure what's going to happen. Meanwhile, it's just really hard to fathom, but the employment rate dropped to 8.4% on Friday when the numbers came out, which is just pretty amazing. And so the president is saying, you know, I can build this economy back. It was going gangbusters before coronavirus, and we'll do that again. We just have to sort this stuff out. And the vaccine, I'm going to talk about that later, but I don't want to get sidetracked with that. But that's part of the controversy. Of course, the Democrats are trying to paint this, and you'll hear some clips if we get to them, about Kamala Harris and others trying to make it sound as though the vaccine is all completely political. And the president's trying to rush it through so that he can get elected, and he's not being careful, and I wouldn't take it if I were you. Kamala basically says that. I wouldn't trust, you know, Donald Trump. The irony is, of course, these are the same people that clamored for a vaccine. You know, you remember Dr. Fauci clamored for a vaccine. It's this guy, you know, we need a vaccine, and we've talked all about that, at least some about it. They want that vaccine, but they don't want it because, you know, whatever President Trump tries to do, they counter. You know, one of the things that he allegedly, what I'm reading, does not poll as well as Biden on is how he has handled the coronavirus. But, of course, the reason that people think he hasn't handled the coronavirus well is because the Democrats keep talking about how almost 200,000 people have died, and, of course, it's his fault. But, you know, my argument would be, I wish he had never brought Dr. Fauci to the stage. That would be my argument. I wish he had done what Sweden did and never shut down. He was trying really hard to do what he thought was right, kind of like John MacArthur in his church, Grace Church out in California, said in his recent article, Jesus Christ, not Caesar, is head of the church. He said, you know, initially our church tried to cooperate because we wanted to help. We wanted to, you know, slow the curve, which is what they kept saying, and not overflood emergency rooms. We wanted to do our part, but gradually we began to see that this was a fraud. It was not real. It was not really a pandemic. And so that's when we opened up, and now, of course, John is in trouble. I'm trying to get him on the show, by the way, so we can have a long conversation with him. But that's why the economy has slowed down. And if the argument against the president's handling, it would be for me, is he tried to do everything he could. He tried to do everything. He tried to manufacture all the equipment they needed. He tried to provide, you know, the masks. He tried to provide everything as best he could. And he did. He went into hyperdrive, responding to his experts like Anthony Fauci. So that would be my complaint. But you cannot say that Donald Trump did not try to do everything he could. I guess if you have to blame someone, you could blame the governor of New York City for causing the death of so many seniors, which is most of their numbers. They ranked highest in the number of deaths, and they were basically killing seniors in these senior facilities by forcing nursing homes to take COVID-positive patients, and it was the elderly who were hit the hardest. It's just a horrific story, really it is. But that's kind of the state of things. I want to talk to you a little bit about this campaign. President Trump was in Pennsylvania on Thursday night. He had tremendous outpouring. Pennsylvania is a state that's traditionally been a Democratic state, at least for a long time. I think he carried it just by a little bit, amazingly, in 2016. So he went back. People said that supporters were lined up U.S. 30 for miles, a chance to see him. He spoke for 90 minutes. I did not get to hear this. Maybe you did. I heard it was one of his best speeches ever. But he was, you know, he's talking about all the things that are happening in the country. Biden, by the way, has led President Trump in the polls in Pennsylvania, and in Real Clear Politics, their average of polls, he still leads by 4 percentage points. But by Thursday morning, Rasmussen, in a telephone online poll of likely voters, indicated a shift showing the race in a dead heat. Another one says that among 82% of voters who say, and this is Pennsylvania, say they are certain now how they will vote in the presidential election, the president holds a slight 51-49% advantage over Joe Biden. Well, we'll see. There are a lot of things happening in the country that are changing the polls. And, of course, there's the all-out assaults against the president. I haven't seen an all-out assault against Joe Biden. I just, you know, did you see his press conference last week or when he went to Kenosha? I was going to play part of it for you. I just can't even fathom, really, how people could think that he could be president. Talk about, I mean, I'll use the president's term, and it's just a descriptor. He has such low energy. Talks behind the desk, this is Joe Biden, and this is how he presents himself. The first person that got up to ask questions, and this was in a church in Kenosha, and there were hardly anybody there. There was hardly anyone there. It was more than social distancing. It was like a couple of people here, and way across the room, there were a couple of other people. It was very sparsely attended. And the first person that got up to speak was a black girl in a kind of, I believe it was like an orange high turban wrapped around her head. And they recognized her, and she came up, and the first thing out of her mouth was, "I know that I'm supposed to say what's on this card, but I want to speak to you from my heart. I know I'm supposed to read what's on this card. I'm supposed to say what you want me to say, but I really kind of want to talk about what I want to talk about." And then she went on to talk about, she was very deeply hurt by what was happening in her city, and she talked about how all colors of people are upset about what's happening in Kenosha. She said other things too. I'm sure she probably supports Joe Biden. She's certainly not a conservative, but they were trying to manage her. And when Joe Biden got ready for questions, he said to his staffers off camera, I don't have a list here. You should recognize the press for questions. So they had their handpicked press, and then they ask him softball questions. Meanwhile, the president's getting hit with everything, and just expect that he will be getting hit by a lot more things before this is over with. I want to tell you a couple of really important things. I mentioned this last week, but I want to zero in on it. Facebook is becoming less and less reliable. Surely you must know that. They are intending, as a matter of fact, to remove various ads for candidates 30 days before the election. So that means, you know, when people really start paying attention to candidates, you may not be able to see candidates that you wish people could see. There are fewer and fewer places where you are able to go. Meanwhile, Facebook, for the truth, is what I meant to say. Facebook is, by the way, pushing, requesting an absentee ballot. And this is the statement. COVID-19 is a valid excuse. So they want you to vote, order a ballot and vote by mail. And I'm telling you, don't you dare do that. Don't do that. And don't let people talk you into doing it. And I don't care if it's Republicans. We have a very serious problem, Houston. And I'll tell you quickly, if I can, Public Interest Legal Foundation, that's Christian Adams, J. Christian Adams, our good friend. That's his organization. They found that people double voted by the thousands in Georgia and North Carolina in 2016 and 2018. They also found in Nevada, in Clark County, Nevada, 225,000 of 1.3 million mailed ballots, 17.3% were sent back to the Postal Service as undeliverable. Only 305,000 mail-in ballots, that's 23.5%, were accepted and counted. And that was in the June primary. In this year's primary season alone, election boards across the country have rejected 534,000 ballots, compared with 318,716 in 2016. A judicial watch has found, in North Carolina, auditors found nearly 20,000 voters who appeared to have voted twice in 2016 and 2018. In Georgia, they found 4,000 dead people on the rolls, but also 10,000 registrants who voted twice in 2016 and 2018. Back to Judicial Watch, in 2019, they found 2.5 million extra voters nationwide. In many counties, the lists are so bloated, they have more registered voters than they have residents. But the problem is, in these various entities, they're sending out ballots just without any discrimination whatsoever. Without cleaning their voting rolls, they're just sending them out. It's happening in Washington, Utah, Hawaii, Oregon, and Colorado. It's all mail-in voting. And even if they got people that are, you know, trying to be honest, the postal system loses an average of 20%. And by the way, in Iowa, a judge has tossed 50,000 absentee ballot requests because the commissioner, or the Linn County Auditor, Joel Miller, filled out their personal information for them. He helped them. When he sent out the ballots. And so 50,000 have been, this is what's going to happen. You're going to get helped in some places. There are other ways of stealing. As a matter of fact, there's a really interesting article on WorldNet Daily, how Democrats plan to steal the 2020 election. I haven't got time to go into that. Then there's also an article I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, Confessions of a Voter Fraud. I was a master at fixing mail-in ballots. That was in New Jersey. Interesting article. We should repost that, and we will. And, of course, there's more, so stay tuned. Meanwhile, call your county and sign up, please, go into the polls. Be involved. Make sure it happens honestly, and do not vote by mail. Go in person. Sandy Rios in the morning.
What happens when an abortion-minded woman hears her baby's heartbeat on an ultrasound? Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her. And she said, I just can't allow this baby to be killed.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she'll choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Preborn centers are the largest providers of free ultrasounds in the country and the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. By letting a mother see her baby on ultrasound and hear the heartbeat, she'll choose life 80% of the time. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Andrea Ramirez, Executive Director of the Center for Faith and Opportunity Initiatives. Her office works with faith leaders and community-based organizations in the area of student-focused education. 1 Corinthians 1:10 reminds us of the importance of community. I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree with one another in what you say, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly united in mind and thought. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Andrea Ramirez. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. The Supreme Court rejected an emergency application from Calvary Chapel in Dayton Valley, Nevada, asking the High Court to halt an order that limits the number of people who can attend church. Casinos can operate at 50% capacity in Nevada, but churches are limited to only 50 people. Chief Justice John Roberts sided with the liberals. It's not the first time. In May, the Chief Justice affirmed a similar attendance ban targeting churches in California. Christians in Nevada have a constitutional responsibility to reject the Supreme Court's decision and defy the state's Democrat governor. We are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. People of faith answer to a higher power. Like Justice Neil Gorsuch said, there's no world in which the Constitution permits Nevada to favor Caesar's Palace over Calvary Chapel. Listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern online, or you can download my free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
President Trump tonight firing back after that explosive report alleging he made disparaging comments about military members.
Sir, do you need to apologize to service members and veterans?
No, it was a fake story written by a magazine that was probably not going to be around much longer.
The president responding to the Atlantic report that he rejected a 2018 trip to an American cemetery in France, saying, why should I go to that cemetery? It's filled with losers. And calling the Marines buried there suckers for getting killed. The story cites four people with firsthand knowledge, but does not name them, and NBC News has not independently confirmed the details. The White House says the trip was scratched because bad weather made it unsafe.
That is an NBC report, and they go on and on. They say that he, you know, calls those people that were killed in the cemeteries losers. And so this is what's going to be happening in the final days of this election. Just brace yourselves. It's going to be stuff like this continually. We know now, I mean, I have got probably 20 pieces of paper in my hand for this alone, people refuting this. I'll start with John Bolton, who does not like President Trump, who was on with Martha McCallum last night and said that there's nothing to that. I was there the whole time. There's nothing to that. We did not go to see that other cemetery because of the weather. It was the weather. That's all it was. It was just the weather. And he recounted the whole thing in great detail. We also have Jack Fuentes, who was a top aide to John Kelly, who was, the rumor has it, one of the sources of this. And Zach, who's with John Kelly the entire time and the president, said, "You can put me on record denying I spoke with The Atlantic. I don't know who the sources are. I did not hear POTUS call anyone losers when I told him about the weather. Honestly, do you think General Kelly would have stood by and let anyone call fellow Marines losers?" And so everyone, The Atlantic is an outlet that has ties to Joe Biden. You must know that. And so the guy that issued the report on it, the writer whose name escapes me in this moment, I'll come across it. They said, what did they say? Four people said the president said that. They're anonymous. And they didn't want to come forward to talk about it because they were afraid they might get some angry tweets. So that's the dastardly story. Can you imagine if you in your life, suddenly somebody said, wrote an email and said that you had said something really bad 5 years ago, two years ago? And there were four people who reported you said it anonymously. They didn't really want to say who their names were, but they all said that you said it. Then this is what's happening. And they print it. They treat it as a legitimate story. Now you have the people that were actually there saying it did not happen. Then you have all kinds of people talking about how, wait a second, we've worked with him. We know how the president feels about the military. In fact, nearly 700 U.S. veterans have issued an open letter in support of President Trump. It's Jeffrey Goldberg. He was then published the story in The Atlantic, and he is a Biden supporter. Interestingly enough, one of the networks, the morning after this story broke, and it broke, in the evening, the very next morning, they had lined up all of these veteran families, people who had been hurt or injured or killed. I don't know how many of them. I did not actually see the report, but they were talking about how horrible it was that President Trump had said the people who had been killed were losers, and they were so offended by it. But the turnaround time was what? The story in The Atlantic came out the night before, and the next morning they already have found these families, just regular folk in the U.S. who've lost loved ones, to already go on camera and produce a report that they are condemning the president. You see the setup. This is how it works. And so these guys, these American veterans, say recent baseless media attacks against President Trump from anonymous sources are just another example of the depths to which the president's opponents are willing to descend to divide the nation and meddle in this election. The military vote's very important to the left, and it's usually pretty strongly, on strong on law and order and strong on a strong commander-in-chief, and the president has done very well with the military. So there's no question that the left is trying to dig into that. A couple of other people responded. This is an interesting one. This is a guy whose wife was killed. It was a suicide bomber. And this is his story. His name is Joe Kent. He's a Gold Star husband. He says, "Hey, Joe." "Hey, Joe," a quiet but familiar voice said to me from the doorway of a small room with plush furniture. The room was meant to provide as much comfort as possible for the families of military members on the worst day of their life, the day the remains of their loved ones are returned to them at Dover Air Force Base. I'd been alone in the room for only a few minutes and was exhausted by restless. The previous 3 days felt like 3 years and 3 minutes all at once, because so much had been taken from my family so quickly and irrevocably that I felt like I was back at war and had just gotten attacked. But unlike in war, I couldn't fight back. That voice from the doorway, though, was familiar to me because it belonged to a man I'd seen on television countless times, President Donald Trump. As he approached me, he extended his right hand to shake mine, placed his left hand on my shoulder, looked me in my eyes, and said, "I'm sorry for your loss. Shannon was an amazing woman." Then he goes on to say, "I thanked the president, and I remember he held eye contact with me, and in his eyes I could see unmistakably the same pain I'd seen in the eyes of other senior leaders who ultimately bear the responsibility for sending men and women to their deaths in combat." And then he talks about how the president asked him about whether we should be still involved in Syria. He actually wanted his opinion. So that's the word of Joe Kent, a Gold Star dad whose father, he was a soldier himself, whose wife was killed by a suicide bomber. And then Sidney Powell tweeted this, a picture of the president at Arlington Cemetery. I've been there before laying wreaths, and it's just, it is the most moving thing. The Gold Star families will come and, you know, sit by the graveside of their loved ones. I've sat with them myself. And so this is a picture of the president, this little boy. This is what, I'll use Sidney's voice words here. One Memorial Day, President Trump was visiting Arlington National Cemetery to honor those who gave the last full measure of devotion when this precious little boy walked up and asked the president to meet his father. The president agreed, expecting to shake hands with his dad. But the story is that the little boy took him to the grave of his father. And this is a picture of President Trump hugging this little boy and then sitting with him and his mom. And he thinks they're, what, dumb? Losers? Yeah. We're supposed to believe that. And so, anyway, that's that. There's more to say about that. But that's, I just wanted to make that point, and so I have done that. All right, over the weekend, we have had a lot of protests. In fact, Mike Tobin did a report on Fox, and let's just, let's do that. That's clip four. Let's listen to what Mike has to say.
A Portland protester in flames from an errant Molotov cocktail thrown by another demonstrator. Saturday, Portland crossed the threshold of 100 nights of protests. Firebombs showed up in the crowd around 9 p.m. Shortly after, police declared a riot. Demonstrators used everything from commercial-grade fireworks to homemade shields. One police officer was burned by fireworks. Others were struck with rocks.
What I'm hoping is that this translates into real action and real change.
President Trump continued to blame Democrats for the unrest and violence.
When you look around at Portland and you see what these Democrats are doing to our cities, take a look at what's happening in New York and Chicago, where you have Democrat-run cities and mayors that are running and governors that are running states so badly. And
the Kentucky Derby ran with no crowds in the stands, but crowds of demonstrators outside.
Breonna Taylor!
Louisville demonstrations triggered by the death of Breonna Taylor. She was shot and killed by police who were serving a no-knock warrant on her house. Anti-police demonstrators met by pro-police, pro-gun demonstrators.
We're mad as hell, and we're not gonna take it!
The conflict of armed counter-protesters and anti-police demonstrators triggered bloodshed and death in Kenosha, Wisconsin last month. Those demonstrations ignited after a police officer shot Jacob Blake, who spoke from his hospital bed over the weekend.
Please, I'm telling you, change our lives out there. We can stick together, make some money, make everything easier for our people out here, man.
A study by Princeton determined the nation has seen more than 10,500 protests over the last 3 months, most of them Black Lives Matter. 93% of the BLM protests have been peaceful, but that still works out to 570 protests that have been violent in 220 locations.
All right, so Mike gave you one of the things that you'll notice is that even Fox is playing down these protesters is just not rioters, anarchists. And I want to tell you some things that you might not know. I think it's important. He did mention this. A Portland protester was caught on fire. And why did he catch on fire? Because the rioters were throwing these firebombs at police. And they threw this firebomb. One of them was doing it from some device on his wrist. And they're walking. This is a residential neighborhood. This is where people live. You see their homes on either side of the street. And so they're walking. I don't know how many of them. There are lots of them. And the police are like, it's odd because the police are walking slowly and the anarchists are walking slowly. So nobody's chasing anyone. And as they walk with this gap between them, the protesters are throwing back these firebombs and then they'll catch they could easily burn a house, anything down because they're not just small. They're probably, I'm guessing, 6, 8, 10 feet when they really burst. There's that much, that kind of flame. So when they threw one of them, this protester lights on fire, and his 2 feet and legs, the bottom parts of his legs are on fire, and he's running around, and they're trying to put it out. It's pretty, you know, it's grotesque to see this happening in a neighborhood in Oregon. Meanwhile, you probably have heard, but I want to make sure that you know, that Michael Forrest Reinold, who was the one who murdered Aaron J. Danielson, he was part of Patriot Prayer in Portland, on the street, just shot him in cold blood, was arrested, and then he was shot. And it was federal, so he's dead. It was federal officers that arrested him. I find that interesting. It was not Portland police. It wasn't Portland, you know, state troopers. It wasn't anyone from Portland. It was federal people. And I, as I mentioned to you before, did you even know who Jay Danielson was? Is that name familiar? He was shot in cold blood on the streets of Portland after that Trump rally, after everyone had passed through. I think they'd been gone by 15, 30 minutes. And this was, you can see the video. It's just done in cold blood. And so this rhino was with someone. You can hear them saying, here's one, there's one. You know, shoot him or something. It's shoot him or do it or some action admonition to shoot. And so rhino does that. And they just kill him in cold blood right there on the street next to his friend. He's got a Patriot prayer hat on. But then it's silent. No one talks about Jay Danielson. No one talks about him in the news. Nobody mentions his name. Do you notice that when, and look, I don't, to me, again, I am, this is not about black and white. I've said that to you enough. It's surely I don't have to say it again, but this is true. If there's a black victim of police, the name goes out immediately. And then the protesters pick it up and say his name or say her name. But this guy was killed in cold blood and no one even knows his name because they didn't report it. It's Jay Danielson, a Patriot prayer. It's like he's a non-entity. No one said his name. And Michael Forrest Reinhold, it doesn't seem to me like the local authorities even went after him. It was the feds who finally went after him. And he was shot and killed in the process. So it's just so wrong. And by the way, the Oregon governor was on, she did a press conference, Kate Brown, and basically said she was asked if she was going to deploy the National Guard. And she said, no, I'm not going to do that because they aren't trained. They're not trained or needed. You know, we're handling things just fine, she said Kate Brown. Meanwhile, around the country, other protests in Pittsburgh. This was really horrendous. I saw this, and maybe you did too, on videos. A huge group of Black Lives Matter protesters marching down the street screaming, F the white people. And then they go to a restaurant where people are eating outdoors. And I think this is like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And they go into where people are eating. One very large woman in a Nazi Lives Don't Matter is what she said on her T-shirt. There's a white older couple sitting, and she goes over and takes their drink, and I think it's a beer, and drinks their beer. Then another person takes the glasses and just shatters them. Meanwhile, someone on a loudspeaker is screaming, F, F, F. A lot of the diners just get up and leave. They go inside the restaurant. There's a group of like 6 or 8 girls. They look like they're out for a bachelorette party of some sort. They look really pretty, all dressed up. I think at least one of them is black, maybe 2, because I couldn't see everyone. But it was a mixed group. And the Black Lives protesters throw their plates. And the girls, you know, jump up and get out. And all the people in that area of the restaurant have to leave. And then the protesters start breaking through the you know how if you sit in sort of a semi-outdoor space where they have like some sort of a visor or a shade or a cover over the open window, they burst through those. It's horrible. And this is what they sounded like. I think maybe you'd want to hear. What did this sound like? It sounded like clip 15. Burn the precinct to the ground, every city, every town. That is a different city. I got the clips mixed up because it was Pittsburgh where they descended on the diners, and there was another clip for that. I don't even think I pulled it. It's so obscene that it's hard to play it. But in another city, that might have been Rochester, where they were marching up and down the streets. By the way, they burned down U-Haul trailers. They burned down one, this is not funny, but just ironic, owned by a black man who had a black owner on his side of his U-Haul because he was hoping they wouldn't burn it down. And they did that in Rochester because a guy, his last name is Prude, Daniel Prude, they placed a cover over his head, a white cover, because he was naked and he was spitting, telling everyone he had COVID, and they put this cover over his head. They call it a spit cover. And then he later died, but now it looks as though he was overdosing on PCP. Doesn't seem to matter, because they are bent on destruction, no matter what the reason. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Brian will tell us what he's interested in, and Brian's interested in about everything. There's not a story out there that he does not see through a biblical lens. It's not finding content for the program. It's finding which content would be best for that day.
Focal Point with Brian Fisher, weekdays at 1 Central on AFR.
Brian walks into the studio with a stack of papers ready to tackle the issues of the day.
Have you been looking for a way to serve others? Are you able to serve in a ministry without being paid? You and Friendships might be the perfect match. Friendships is currently taking applications for volunteers providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished, both here at home and around the world. Get more information at friendships.org or by calling 337-433-5022.
Faith, hope, love abide these three, but the greatest of these is love. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Karl Marx, an emissary of evil, and Charles Spurgeon, the prince of preachers, were evangelists of diametrically opposed messages. Yet they both lived in London at the same time. In fact, when asked the name of the person he most detested, Frederick Engels, Marx's cohort in chaos, responded unequivocally, Spurgeon. A generation later, George Bernard Shaw, a hardcore communist, seethed in hatred for William Booth and his Salvation Army of volunteers. Time and again, robust Christian witness has been the inoculant against the proliferation of Marxist poison in society.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. President Trump has been mocked for saying that mail-in voting leads to voter fraud and chaos, but every day he has proved right. Detroit has a mail-in catastrophe on its hands. First, they cannot legally even start counting votes in 72% of precincts because the poll books and the number of votes cast don't match. Now comes eyewitness evidence that up to 20,000 votes were counted without being verified because workers were running so far behind. Trump's margin of victory in 2016 in Michigan was just 10,704 votes, meaning in a close election, this kind of chaos and likely fraud could put someone in office whom the people did not choose. Time to go back to in-person voting with voter ID to keep a Travis Schumacher-y like this from ever happening again.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Chinese Communist Party is doing a fundraiser. It's getting Wall Street's help to tap American investors for many billions of dollars to underwrite a PRC conglomerate called Ant Group. If they do massively underwrite Ant's upcoming initial public offering in Hong Kong, Beijing believes its crackdown on that territory will be validated. Fortunately, a new risk profile by RWR Advisory Group reveals seven compelling reasons not to invest in Ant, including the company's reported involvement in human rights abuses, diversion of users' private data, and ties to the Chinese military. President Trump is running this fall on a platform that showcases his serious differences with Vice President Biden about China, opposing U.S. investments in malevolent CCP companies and standing with the people of Hong Kong not validating their oppressors should be a basis for strong bipartisan agreement. Learn more at divestchinanow.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I was very disappointed at some of the guys on television today talking about white privilege. Very disappointed. They're like, well, this doesn't happen to black guys. And I'm like, what happened to Doc Rivers? It happened to Jason Kidd. It happened to Derek Fisher. So I was really disappointed in some of those guys.
Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, I was really disappointed guys say, and Isaiah Thomas, not disappointed in Isaiah, but I just think when you have a responsibility, especially when you have to talk about something serious like race, you can't be full of crap. You got to be honest and fair. So listen, I say Steve Nash is a great player and a good dude, but I was so disappointed on these guys. So I said, dude, black guys have done this before. Now, do we need more black coaches in the NBA? Yes. Do we need more black coaches in college football? Yes. Do we need more black coaches in pro football? Yes. But this wasn't the right time to set it today. Good luck to Steve Nash.
Yeah, so that was Charles Barkley. And, of course, he was responding to Stephen A. Smith for going off on this, Steve Nash being appointed to be the coach of the Nets. And the point here is this, that Charles Barkley represents a group of black American athletes who are not in consort with what's happening in terms of racism. In fact, you should, I have had time, I play, but you can hear it for yourself on ESPN. Stephen A. Smith responded and doubled down, and you know, he thinks it's all about systemic racism. Charles doesn't believe that, and it's interesting because when I watched that documentary for on Michael Jordan and his on my husband and I really enjoyed that. I don't know if you, it's called The Last Dance. One of the things that struck me, and I have mentioned this before, but I'm repeating myself, is how these guys when they stood. They were in the Olympics. Remember that? They're like the dream team in the Olympics. And when they won the gold medal and they stood on that, the risers, they cried. They were proud of their country. And when the flag, they told you, they said they couldn't, it just was so moving to them to represent their country. So it hasn't always been the way it is now. It's really, I think that this, look, it was terrible in the 50s. It was terrible in the 60s. I saw it begin to shift in the 80s. It got so much better in the 90s in terms of the racial tensions. And then when Barack Obama was elected and made it like a focal point of his message through his attorney general, everything flipped on its head and we went backwards. It's kind of like, and I always think of it this way. Let's say you've been through a painful divorce, because a lot of you have, you know, let's just think of that. And so you have good reason to be upset with your former spouse. And if you think about it, you know, there are a lot of bad memories, but you've pretty much healed. You feel pretty good about it. But then, you know, Aunt Martha comes, and she had a first, a front row seat to what happened to you. And she begins to talk, remember when this, and remember when he said that. And you begin to remember, and then you remember, you start hurting again and ruminating. That's right. And all those feelings are conjured up again. It happens. It's human nature. Really isn't just about race. It's really human nature. When you have a pain from the past and somebody brings it up and stirs it, you know, there are a lot of sayings about that, stirring the stink up. That's what it means. And that's what he did. And that's, we're seeing the results of that in our streets. I think it's very interesting to talk about something that my good friend Paul Kinger, who's been our guest so often, he's the one who wrote The Devil and Karl Marx. Paul has written another article while I was gone. He wrote this, and I wanted to bring it to your attention. It's Marxists always said if they can infiltrate 1% of society, they can control the other 99%. So hang with me, because this will tie into Charles Barkley and what I just said in a second here. He talks about, Paul does, about how in an exclusive thing for Western Journal, General Michael Flynn expressed an observation. He said, quote, I was once told if we're not careful, 2% of the passionate will control 98% of the indifferent 100% of the time. And Flynn writes, the more I've thought about this phrase, the more I believe it. By the way, I just have to interject. While Peter Strzok is out there, you know, touting his new book and getting interviewed and, you know, whining about how he was treated and making his own case for what happened with General Flynn. General Flynn is under a gag order by Judge Sullivan, the same rogue judge who is refusing to let General Flynn go free. General Flynn cannot speak, but Peter Strzok, that's fine, different. Just talk about injustice, but back to this. So General Flynn said, if we're not careful, 2% of the passionate will control 98% of the indifferent, 100% all the time. Now, moving down in Paul's article, he goes back to and compares what General Flynn said to Manning Johnson. Manning Johnson was a brilliant and courageous man, well known as a leading African-American Marxist who left the Communist Party. He had served on the National Negro Commission, an important subcommittee of the National Committee of the Communist Party. The commission was important because of the vigorous push by Communist Party USA and the Soviet Comintern to attempt to organize black Americans into a segregated Negro republic in the South. The commission noted Johnson, again, this is Manning Johnson, the black communist. The commission was created, quote, on direct orders from Moscow to facilitate the subversion of the Negroes, end quote. Johnson there discovered not only the extent to which black Americans were targeted by the Kremlin hierarchy, but how the white overseers in the Communist Party, USA, mistreated their African-American brothers, especially with a demeaning attitude of subservience. White American communist officials spied on black communists, treated them as their Negro lickspittles, that's his words, and used white women, this is his words, white women communists as political prostitutes. Johnson left the party in disgust not only over this, but because of his comrades' war on religion and a diabolical attempt to deceive and infiltrate and manipulate churches. Johnson had refused to part with the faith of his youth, even as the party demanded that he liquidate his Christian faith and help communists penetrate churches. This is from Johnson again. It is an axiom in communist organization strategy that if an infiltrated body has 1% Communist Party members and 9% Communist Party sympathizers with well-rehearsed plans of action, they can effectively control the remaining 90%. That's what Johnson, the black communist, told the U.S. Congress in sworn testimony in July of 1953. So Paul goes back and traces this. He gives a lot of examples. This is a long article, so I can't read it all to you. But he talks about ex-communists Ben Getlow and Bella Dodd, who repeatedly awed at how they, as communist ringleaders, could take over an organization or hijack or cause a movement with just a handful of trained Marxist organizers. Then that takes us back where Paul reminds us that the Black Lives Matter movement are being operated by trained Marxist organizers. Patrice Cullors, we've played this for you several times. She said in an interview, we actually do have an ideological frame. That's Patrice saying that of herself and Black Lives Matter co-founder Alicia Garza. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists. We are super versed. We are super versed on sort of ideological theories. So, I want to read this final thing from Paul. It reflects the long-sorted history of this kind of clever Marxist organizing. This is exactly what trained Marxist organizers do. They take a genuinely just cause like stopping police violence against people of color, which of course has nothing to do with Marxism and appeals to any non-Marxist, and they use it to draw support to an organization that at its website seeks to rally comrades. Yes, Black Lives Matter website uses that word more than once, to, quote, disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure, end quote. It says a lot more things than that, but that just gives you an idea. This is Paul's latest article. Marxists always said if they can infiltrate 1% of society, they can control the other 99%. My point is that Charles Barkley, I started out playing that. I don't know if Charles knows all of that. He probably doesn't. But this is a pattern. My husband and I are watching we're watching a French series on the French resistance and how the Nazis came into France. And there are a lot of communists in this particular series. And it's very interesting because even then they were talking about black and brown people being oppressed. This was like 1940. Not that they weren't, but it's a thing they use in order to control people. And this is what they're doing again in the black community. They're doing it in America. They're doing it in our churches under the guise of social justice. Very clever, and it's working. William Barr was on with Mark Levin maybe it was Sunday night, and they had a very interesting discussion on what's happening in our streets. And I just think it's interesting to listen at least to William Barr. Let's listen to clip 7.
They are projecting a narrative. When the word narrative came into currency, I knew we were in trouble because the word narrative really suggests that there's no objective truth. There's no real story of what happened. It's just everyone has their own narrative. and you get to then the press can justify presenting a story that doesn't really correspond to objective truth, but it's our narrative. We have a narrative, you have a narrative. I've been appalled at what's on this violence because it's happening right out in the streets. Anyone with eyes can see what's happening. They see the violence. They see these groups of agitators in their black outfits, in their helmets and their shields, which incidentally have the hammer and sickle on them most of the time, rushing the police, causing violence, throwing rocks, people showing up with the rocks and the frozen bottles. That's happening. That's happening in front of people. You don't see it on any of the national news. You don't see it on the networks. You don't see it on the other cable stations. And yet you hear about these peaceful demonstrators. So it's a lie. The American people are being told a lie by the media. As you and I know, the First Amendment applied to every individual citizen. This was the day of the pamphlet, and everyone's speech is the same. What we're talking here about corporations that are in the media business, and there are a few of them, and they all pretty much toe the party line. The difference in content in terms of the news reporting is all the same. I like it when Fox goes through some of the reporting of each channel, how they use exactly the same phraseology and same talking points, and that's what you see. It's become extremely monolithic. And it's wedded in many ways to the Democratic Party. It's a partisan press, largely.
And speaking of that partisan press, Washington Post is promising catastrophic violence if Joe Biden does not win the election. How are they doing that? They had an article by Georgetown University professor Rosa Brooks last Thursday, and the article was entitled, "What's the Worst That Could Happen? The election will likely spark violence and a constitutional crisis." What they did, they got a bunch of so-called experts together, calling it the Transition Integrity Project, co-founded by Rosa Brooks, and they war-gamed what would happen. And they say a landslide for Joe Biden resulted in a relatively orderly transfer of power. Every other scenario we looked at involved street violence and political crisis. So, just know that while they are pushing mail-in ballots and they're talking about, they've already said several of them many times, I think Kamala Harris has said it, Joe Biden has said it, and other operatives, that Trump will not give, they'll have to come and take him out of the White House. Al Gore said it recently again. They're going to have to remove him forcibly because he won't give up. They're planting a seed. This is what they do. This is the narrative that William Barr was just talking about. They want you to think about that. You see, they want to plant the seed. Remember that in 2016, it was Hillary Clinton that would not concede. I'm not sure she ever did concede. And she is the one who has claimed since that election that she was the rightful victor, that it was stolen from her. And then they launched almost the next day after the election this Russian collusion. Nonsense. Hoax. Because they would not accept the results. So this is what they do. They always accuse the opposite, their enemies, their opponents, of what they themselves are doing. If you want to know what they're up to, just listen to what they're accusing conservatives and the regular Americans of. All right, so what do we do about this? Well, I want to just challenge you one more time to pick up the phone and volunteer in the polls. Tell your friends and your neighbors and your friends, I don't care what side of they're on of this issue. Maybe they don't like President Trump and they love Joe Biden. They still should go vote in person because they cannot be sure their ballot is going to be counted. The Postal Service loses on average 20%. And then I've told you about all the fraud that's going on and the shenanigans. Vote in person. That's something you can do. And help a candidate. Somebody anywhere in the country that you like, you can help them. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.